welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Barns are a common sight for anyone who journeys cross-state in Ohio, but they are less and less common. On the flip side, who thinks about barns in Upper Arlington anyway? Turns out city planners and barn preservationists have joined forces to reconstitute the oldest known agricultural structure in the Columbus suburb for a community center. There's going to be a barn raising this weekend. Coming up later, we'll talk with the Upper Arlington Parks and Recreation Director and also the Timber Framers Guild Executive Director. We'll also hear from the Timber Framers Guild. Right now, we welcome Rick Beck in his day job. Rick is Captain Rick Beck of the Upper Arlington Fire Department, but he's also president of the Friends of Ohio Barns. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thanks.
And then I said that Rudy Christian was going to come up later, but I didn't mean that. He is Executive Director of the Preservation Trades Network, and he's going to join us as well now. Welcome to the show, Rudy.
Glad to be here.
The Friends of Ohio Barns, it's a relatively young organization. I guess I was a little surprised at that. It was founded in 2002. Is that right, Rick?
Correct.
And what inspired the organization to form in the first place, Rudy? You were a founding member of the
organization. There was a fellow named Chuck Whitney, who unfortunately is no longer with us, who really took an interest in barns, and it got started early in his life when he was interested in farming and farm equipment, and then he later on became more interested in barns. You may remember Malabar Farms had a tragic fire back in 93, and the big barn burned down. Mm-hmm. When we rebuilt that big barn in 1994, the Timber Framers Guild came in, and we had a large group of people come in and help with that barn raising, which was well advertised. We had 55,000 people came out to that barn raising. Well, when Chuck saw that was going on, he just got so enamored of it, he just gravitated towards it.
Wait a minute, did you say 55,000? Wow.
It was a tremendous event. We had people standing in the same place at the snow fence they had put up to keep them off the work site for 3 days in a row.
You were filming Witness or something, right?
It was astounding. So, but when Chuck's interest was spiked by that, he decided that maybe we should see how many people in Ohio had that same interest in barns, because so many people came to the barn raising. Maybe we should kind of measure this, figure out how many people are interested. So he suggested we have a barn conference, and we had it in Delaware at the Delaware Church. Huge church up there. And we figured about 150 people would come. We filled the building. We had people standing at the windows. We had people standing at the doors. It was amazing. And so the next year we had it in Worcester. That was 2002. And we had a very good turnout, 350-some people.
Now, these were committed people that weren't just there.
Well, they were there because there are so many people in the state of Ohio who recognize this loss, who see this loss. And when they have an opportunity to come and maybe do something about it, or at least see if something can be done about it, they're going to show up. And so that's when we formed the steering committee, and that's when the organization got started. It was 2002.
I guess there's nothing sadder than driving down the road and seeing a barn going to seed. No pun intended. I mean, just falling apart, falling down. You know, you can see there once was an incredible structure there, and now it's going. Do you get calls from people, Rick, saying, can you save this barn?
Oh, yeah, a lot. And part of it is that with the recognition of Friends of Ohio Barns, with our 10th year last year, we're really starting to get that those calls coming in. And unfortunately, we don't have time to go out and see all of them. And even worse yet, some of the calls that we get for people to come out and look at their barns, they're way too far gone for us to really do anything about it. But again, the important thing that I think that is starting to happen on a statewide basis is that we're really getting the information out there and we're getting the message out there. And that's a big part of what our organization is all about, is to raise awareness and to help educate people to understand the importance of preservation of these beautiful, magnificent structures and the importance of trying to find something to do with them and give them a new life, if at all possible. And part of what we're doing this week is that very thing. We're giving an old barn a new life, and it's very exciting for us to do that.
What was the peak number in Ohio? Do you know? Do you have any estimates? Rudy?
We're working on that right now. We actually have a statewide barn survey that's beginning. We're working on one right now in Wayne County. Lincoln County is working on one. It's been finished in Ashland. Wayne County has 2,200 barns that are older than 50 years old. That's what
Is that what
qualifies,
you're shooting for?
Yeah,
okay.
Historic. That's a federal standard for historic, over 50 years. We have 2,200 of them in Wayne County. Ashland County had 1,800. So if you figure an average of somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000, we have 88 counties in the state, you can kind of do the math from there. I would say that at this point in time, we've probably lost at least 25%, if not more, of the barns that were originally built in the state.
And lost by mean they're completely gone? Or are they so far gone they can't be reclaimed?
A lot of things have happened. Rick can tell you that for many years, fire departments would go and burn them for practice.
Right. My son wanted me to ask you about that. Now that was his one question. You don't do that anymore.
Well, I'm happy to say that part of what's happened on the state level in the fire service, actually a national level, is that there's been a big push to prevent departments from burning old barns. And speaking from a firefighter's aspect, there really is little value to the firefighters to do that. It's just a big open space. And the problems are varied in that many times people stored old chemicals and what have you, oil and that sort of thing that has dripped for years and years on the barn wood. And so when that gets ignited, there's all sorts of chemical releases that go out. So there's really no win situation to burning them down at all. And so it's great to see that we're not doing that anymore.
614-292-8513. If you would like to join the conversation via phone. My guests are Rudy Christian. He's executive director of the Preservation Trades Network, and also Rick Beck. He is president of the Friends of Ohio Barns. Or you can go to our email at allsides@wosu.org or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. What is the primary reason for their demise? Is it just because there's the way that barns were built for multiple uses in the past aren't necessary anymore, or is it just because farms are going out of business or a lot of stuff, right?
It's a little bit of both. Barns were built for a particular size back then because farming was pretty much family-type farming, and so the acreage that was there and tillable acreage that was going to be used, they didn't need the big-size barns. They didn't have the equipment and the machinery way back when in the early 1800s. And so there wasn't a need. Basically, the barns were built for storage of crops and product. Even in parts of Ohio, some of the barns that were built, some of the styles of the barns were not built to house animals. People that came across from England, the English-style barns they were accustomed to a more temperate climate in England, and so they didn't have the need to house their livestock. They got over here, and the harsh winters that were here in Ohio, they quickly realized that was a problem. So, and as agriculture grew and as farms grew and got bigger, then they felt the need for larger structures, and many times the barns were simply added on to, and so there were shed additions. They were added to the barns, or the barns were just a new wing was simply added to the barns, and so they could quickly double or triple in size. But again, as farming again continued to progress into the 1900s and 1920s and 30s, the buildings really started to be too small for what the production that was going on. The family farms were quickly going away, and you're coming into more production-type farms. And so the need for bigger space, bigger storage area, it just kind of pushed the old barns to the side.
614-292-8513. Thomas, you're on the air. Is that what you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I had a quick question. Okay. My family, a big part of my family grew up in Logan County, and my grandfather had always felt a big disappearance of the barns because he saw it in his lifetime was farmers moving to more contract work, not needing a barn for multiple uses, you know, for farming corn and having animals and that kind of thing. Do you think that, you know, the corporate rise of the farmer had anything to do with the demise of the barn?
Yeah, when I was reading about barns and historical barns, Rudy, it was interesting to find out how all the different kinds of things they did in the barn. It wasn't just for storing grain or
the barn was the center of your life. I mean, literally, when we first settled this state, the first thing that you would do is you would build a temporary shelter for your family, and that's where the log cabin came from. And then the next thing you would do is you would build a good, solid barn. And, of course, timber frame construction is a very solid way to build structures. And they're structures that are meant to last for generations. But the reason that you focused on building that barn first, the real barn, not the temporary barn, mm-hmm. but the real barn, is that that's where you stored your grain. All your crops were stored there. That's where you kept your animals and took care of your animals. That's what fed you was that barn. That's what fed your family was that barn. And as your caller has asked, the truth is that type of lifestyle, I mean, how many people go out in their barn and thresh grain on the threshing floor before they make a loaf of bread? We don't do that today. We don't thresh the grain by hand and then take it to the mill and have it ground and make bread. We go to the store and we buy the bread ready-made. So the utility of the barn changed. But I think one of the things that's important for everybody in this discussion to realize is that the fact that the barn is no longer useful is a matter of perspective. It is not the barn's fault that it is not useful anymore. It's the things that we've done. It's that going to contract farming. It's that going to the grocery store to buy things. It's all of the things that have changed. We haven't taken the time to look at that barn as something that was built for us, because that was the truth is the barn was built for us.
And built to last the ages.
Absolutely.
Many right. of them, if you take care of them properly.
Right. Right. So we need to find new uses for them, because that's what's going to keep them alive.
Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I was interested, before we go on a break, Rudy, it was a newspaper article, and I can't remember the name of the newspaper, but you said in that article, it was at the very top, you said that the Japanese disassemble and reassemble 1,000-year-old timber frame barns, not to preserve them, but to preserve the knowledge of how they are made. I thought that was really interesting and a very different take on the typical American approach to preservation.
Absolutely. One of the things that I find very disappointing about the way that preservation is dealt with in this country is when we give historic status to a structure, say you get your structure onto the National Register of Historic Places or any other sort of accreditation for it, that building immediately becomes a sacred entity. The structure does, not how it was built. And so if you take a barn apart in the United States, it immediately loses its historic status, which makes no sense whatsoever. Because if you go to Japan and you look at those structures that we're talking about, some of them are 2,000 years old. And if they hadn't been taking the time over that 2,000 years to keep the trades alive that understand how those buildings work, those buildings would cease to exist. And that's another thing that's impacting our historic barns in this country, is the fact that the people who built them had trades that so few of us have anymore. That's why the organization like the Timber Framers Guild, the Preservation Trades Network, we're here to do that next step that Rick is talking about. Friends of Ohio Barns' purpose is to bring awareness. But once you have awareness, let's say you decide, okay, I want to fix up my barn. I want to keep my barn. Now what do you do? Where do you find the people to do the work? And that's a challenge for some people sometimes.
We have to take a break. When we return, Joel McCarthy, Executive Director of the Timber Framers Guild, will be with us. Also, Tim Maloney, he's the Parks and Rec Director in Upper Arlington. We'll get to the calls, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Connect with WOSU through one of our e-newsletters. Visit WOSU.org/email and sign up to receive emails about our news programming, special events, classical music, and more. You can connect with WOSU Public Media at our website, WOSU.org/email, and be sure to sign up for one of our e-newsletters. And we also want to hear your opinion on our radio and web programming. Visit WOSU.org/survey, and there you can sign up to be a part of our audience advisory panel. WOSU.org/survey. 81 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Some sunshine today, a slight chance of afternoon rain, a high right around 85. A few clouds tonight with a chance of evening rain, a low of 65 degrees, and sunshine and a near record high of 92 tomorrow. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820, NPR News.
K
Can't You Just Picture It? That is a song. It's called Building the Barn. It was composed by Maurice Jarre from the original score of the movie Witness, with Harrison Ford and Kelly McGillis. I happen to know that off the top of my head. Joining us now is Tim Maloney. He's the Parks and Rec Director in Upper Arlington. Welcome to the show, Joel.
Thank you for having us.
And also, also Joel McCarty, Timber Framers Guild Executive Director. Hi, Joel. How you doing?
Thanks for making us welcome.
You're welcome. Repurposing a barn is probably one of the biggest. It's a big motivator because then you can pay and you can afford to do it in the first place and reconstitute it in the first place. Right, Tim?
Yeah, and actually in the last segment with Rudy, I was thinking to myself, what a great transition where the use of barns maybe has changed over the years, but here at the City of Upper Arlington, we have found a new use for one of our really historic and special structures for use for all of our residents.
How did that come about?
It's a very long story to fit into a segment, but
it reads kind of short. I mean, actually, when I was
about 4 years ago, our historical society became aware of a structure off of Lane Road that might be destroyed because the property was going to come for sale, and we assumed it was going to be torn down to build a new home. And they brought the barn to my attention. Would the Parks and Rec Department be interested in it? And we met out on site, and to a layperson myself, the barn looked old. Mm-hmm. And for somebody who doesn't have any knowledge, I was thinking to myself, boy, that's an old dilapidated barn. And I told the director of the Historic Society, if she found an expert who could say this barn's worthy of saving, we can continue the conversation. And minutes later, literally, I see one of my coworkers
standing in the wings.
At the time, Lieutenant Beck, and I was like, "Hey, Rick, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Oh, I'm president of Friends of Ohio Barns." And I said, "Oh, well, I think I know where this conversation's going." And really, through their education, we realized we have an unbelievably special structure there. We're going to have the official date here later this week of how old it is, but we know it's an 1800s barn that was built, we thought, on that spot, but originally built further south in Arlington by the Legg family. And then in the 1920s, that barn was no longer needed by the Leggs and then was moved up onto Lane Road by the Davidsons. So really fitting into, you know, what Rudy said, a new use was found for that barn, or to go to the back to Japan, where a structure was actually taken apart and moved. The Davidsons then rebuilt that barn for their use to house cattle.
It was moved for agricultural purposes.
Yeah, and okay. And then the barn was used for agricultural purposes up into the 60s. And for Upper Arlington, that's when North Arlington really started to develop. Actually, one of my coworkers, when she was a kid, used to buy eggs out of that barn. She would drive up the hill, buy eggs on a Sunday, and leave the money in the next to the refrigerator and head back. So it's relatively new history for us in Upper Arlington.
What was the tipping point for the city to decide to do this?
The real tipping point, there was a energy really started immediately, but we decided to approach the Upper Arlington Community Foundation to see if they would take this project on as one of theirs, so not a tax-driven initiative, but privately funded. And after the first meeting, you could tell from their excitement that this project was going to happen.
Were there obstacles? Or once you decided to do it, anything can happen in Upper Arlington?
Even through the process today, there's obstacles, but they really, and it's going to sound cliche, but they're challenges. They're almost fun to get through. Funding was a challenge. Where is it going to go? What is it going to be used for? I know one of my original conversations was, yeah, we need a place to store some of our lawn mowing equipment on the east side of the river. And that didn't fly very fast, by the way. And every challenge has really made the project a better project as we've moved on.
Joel McCarty, there's been a revival of timber framing in North America. Is that because of organizations like Timber Framers Guild, or is Timber Framers Guild a reflection of the revival?
Yeah, I think it's a cause and effect. People were timber framing in New England in the 70s, long before the Guild was born in 85. We're really the effect, not the cause, although we like to think of ourselves as a cause going forward. We're trades educators and a licensed DO, Department of Labor recognized provider of apprenticeship services, and our existence is really focused on training timber framers and making the world safe for timber framing. And these community service building projects are one of the tools that we use, and it's, of course, my personal favorite because the energy is so great.
Yeah, tell us about the relationship and how that works, because you're donating your time?
We've got a crew of about 25, and I think 21 of them are volunteers.
So what's going to happen on Sunday at the barn raising?
You will not see a period-appropriate reenactment of the movie Witness.
Okay.
As much as I admire and resemble Harrison Ford, we actually are running a major modern OSHA-compliant timber frame raising right now that you could come down and see. Rick, what's the name of that school? Greensview?
It's Greensview Elementary School.
So if you were to get near the school, you could see what we're doing. There's a great big crane there and a bunch of heavy equipment and people in hard hats and harnesses and all running this kind of contemporary 21st century building project. And that's the new barn, which we have not paid any attention to in this conversation. And that's okay, but that's an important part of this process for mm-hmm. us. So we're able to put together an event that is instructional and celebratory all at the same time. And when we're really good at that, it resonates horizontally and through time. So there'll be people talking about the success of this project as a cultural event, as a community building event, long after the building is in daily use through Tim's efforts.
Is it going to take just a day? I mean, are they just going to whip this baby up or?
No, it's definitely not going to take a day.
That's just in the movies.
The Guild has been on site for a week now. And the new frame really has taken shape. It looks like a new frame.
Okay.
And when they leave Sunday evening, the old frame is going to take shape. But that's the frame. On top of the frame is going to take the insulation, the siding, the finish work, the furniture. And we're anticipating that's going to take several more months before we really open this up to the public for their use. As the project moves on, though, you can really see it take shape now. I mean, when you drive by it, that's a barn. And you can see it, and the traffic has increased since then.
Are you hoping people show up to watch on Sunday?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
The more,
I'm hoping
the
they show up to watch this afternoon.
Okay, it's open season.
We got a personable bunch of men and women on this job, and the weather's been good, the food's been great, the schedule is intact. So we would much rather talk than work, I think, most of us. And I would actually encourage any and all of your listeners to come by, lean on the fence, ask a question or three or 300.
And what's the location of that again?
4395 Carriage Hill Lane. It's right off of Windham Road in North Arlington behind Greensview Elementary School.
Okay. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ruth, you're on the air. You have a question about media coverage?
Exactly.
But not WOSU coverage.
Well, I do wonder about that, too. Okay. Is WOSU going to be out there filming for Columbus Neighborhood?
Well, I can't. I'm not the news director. I can't respond to that question, but what else?
Yeah, well, I was wondering, too, have any of the craft classes, like woodworking from any of the local high schools, been out there? Has there been coverage from the other commercial media? And I've seen articles in the Upper Arlington News, and I've been by several times, and I've seen progress, and I've seen young kids out there, but have kids of high school age been to see the history of it?
Well, everybody's looking at me right now. We've had very solid coverage up till now. I will say we haven't had any of the television media out. From our end, our due diligence is there. We've created many, many creative press packets to get the media out there, and we're all the time encouraging them to come out. We have had some dispatch coverage as well. We're expecting more as the weekend goes on. But as of now, no television media. And for involving the schools, that's the real commitment from the Historic Society. The Historic Society from the get-go has made a commitment to make this an educational process.
Well, has an emphasis been put out to the media on the old crafting methods?
That's what got me interested, Ruth. You know, they were pitching it to me for a while, and finally I actually sat down and read about it and thought, well, this is very interesting.
Yep.
Ruth, you and I spoke this morning, didn't we?
Right.
Yeah,
yes,
this is Joel McCarty. You've been by the site a couple of times, and people have been talking to you and answering your questions and making you welcome?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what we want, and we want more of that because we are evangelists for a building technology and trades education, which is very weak in this country. Rudy's nodding his head and weeping.
Yep.
but we're good at this, and we're good about talking about what we do, and we're also really good about talking about why we think it's important. And an opportunity to do that one-on-one is what we're looking for.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
614-292-8513 if you want to give a call and talk to us like Ruth just did. Could you do the same job any other way? In other words, with different tools, modern tools? Or are they just the same tools you'd always use anyways?
I think your question is timber frame specific. And what you'll see on our job site when you come to visit are a variety of tools that your grandparents would recognize and some modern iterations that they would not. So there's several different ways of sawing a piece of wood in half, and all the hand-powered iterations of that technology are there and in daily use by our team. We also have some 21st century expensive versions of, well, they essentially look like oversized versions of things that you're familiar with, giant drills and huge saws and such like. But there's nothing mysterious or magical or electronic or quantum in the mix that would be puzzling to anybody.
We have an email now from Lou. Writes, is there a difference between the way the Amish build barns today and the way they were built in older times? Does anyone, Rudy?
Well, actually, I think the sad truth is that most of the Amish barn builders today are moving to the modern techniques of pole construction, where they're actually sinking pressure-treated poles in the barn building, in the ground, and building barns that way. Josie Miller was one of the last of the great barn builders, and he was up in the Wayne County Amish outside of Kidron, and I had an opportunity to meet Josie early on in my career as a timber framer, and he was a great man to be around, but he also was very, very Amish, and when you would ask him questions, you would get answers that were meant to not really satisfy you, but unfortunately, he's gone. His son that he was handing that work off to also has been lost in a tragic accident, and unfortunately, the truth is the Amish community has been losing their traditional tradespeople for many of the same reasons that the English community has, because as Joel said, one of the big problems we have is education. Mm-hmm. If you look at the school system today, you'll find that where there used to be shop classes, there are computer labs. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty hard to build a building like this with a computer. I mean, you can design the building with a computer. You can make beautiful pictures and renderings of the building with a computer. But the only thing that computers have to do with building timber frames today is the very modern CNC joinery that's done with machines like the Hundinger. And in those cases, the timber frames actually are basically, you can buy a timber frame today that was never touched by human hands. It's just all done by machinery. And we like to think that that's really part of one of the things that's so marvelous about timber framing, because timber framing continues to work when you use those modern tools. You can still apply modern technology and old techniques and make marvelous buildings that are going to last for generations, and at the same time you can use the old techniques and do it. What the Preservation Trades Network is about is realizing that if you want to preserve the buildings that we have, you do need the knowledge of how to use those old techniques and those old tools that you were talking about. And so that's where it's important for us to have that. It's in preserving the heritage that was built for us. Those buildings were meant to last for generation after generation after generation. We're the generation that's now the owners of them. And so it's our responsibility to take care of them. And so that's where having those traditional tools and those traditional methods and understanding and knowledge comes into play. But you can build a timber frame any way you want. You can build it all by hand, or you can build it all by machine.
614-292-8513 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Laura, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you for having a program about our magnificent old barns.
You're welcome.
I just have a comment. I run into a lot of people that feel that their barns are now a liability. They're not being used the same way. And I'm feeling that we could encourage people to be better stewards of those historic structures if there was grant funding available at a state or federal level, or even if property taxes could be readjusted to not factor so highly into deciding your barn is a liability.
You know, I was going to ask about property owners, and what if, number one, what if they don't care about the barn? But number two, what if they care but they don't have the resources?
And we run into that quite often. Friends of Ohio Barns has a yearly conference, and we try to go to different parts of the state every year. One, to get our name out, but also, two, to get people that are local to realize that we're there and to get them engaged in the idea of stewardship. And it's certainly one of the top questions that we get all the time is, yeah, I would love to do something about my barn. Can you provide me any money to do it with? And unfortunately, the answer to that is we don't really have anything per se. There was a bill, really, you remember, that nationally that they put in.
In the Farm Bill. It's been there for a number of years now. And it was over $5 million set aside in the Farm Bill for states to use for barn preservation and for education.
Was it set aside in theory and not actually?
Correct.
Right?
It's never been funded yet. Not one time has it been funded, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But there is some money for barn owners. It's not a lot of money, but there is some money out there, and any dollar counts, and that's the tax credit.
I'm curious how much this all costs. I mean, I know with the community center, Tim, that's above and beyond, but what does it cost? How far would $5 million get you in preserving barns in the United States?
Not very far, but, and again, that's one of the things that we try to get across to our members or people that come in and listen to our presentations is that a little bit of maintenance every year goes a long way, and so it keeps the overall costs of renovation, of trying to find a new life for this particular barn, a lot easier. But unfortunately, when the farms grew and they changed and family farming kind of went by the wayside, the maintenance also dropped. And so people have the good idea about wanting to take care of their barns, but, you know, they forget. And so 1 year rolls into five, rolls into 10. And so that hole in the roof where the water is coming down is now rotting out posts and the barn starting to sag. And when it gets to that, then it's very expensive. And it's difficult for anybody to try and do anything about it. Now, we have seen numerous examples of families that have taken barns and have totally had them redone and had them rebuilt with no other end use in mind other than it was something that brought such terrific family memories and such good times that they wanted to preserve those. And so some of the things that we also ask people when they ask us, where is their money available to do, we turn around and ask them, well, what would be the end use of what you want this barn to be? And so a lot of times that drives their decision-making process in terms of how much money that they want to throw into it. Our organization is trying to do something on our own level in cooperation with the Columbus Foundation in that we are trying to set up an endowment fund, and we're hoping to take some of that endowment money and do the same kind of things that we're talking about as far as tax breaks money. So we're still in the beginning stages of that, but we're hopeful as an organization that we can help out our own state that way.
We have to take another break. When we return, we'll get to those calls and emails. If you'd like to call us, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Now that President Obama has declared the end of America's combat mission in Iraq and American combat troops have pulled out, what's going on there? What are our remaining troops doing? And what did the war really accomplish? We talk with Anthony Shadid, who's covered Iraq since the 2003 invasion, first for The Washington Post, then The New York Times. He's won two Pulitzer Prizes. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. In public radio, listener feedback is very important. Your thoughts on the conversations we've been having across the radio and web matter a lot to us. So NPR is partnering with WOSU to create an online audience advisory panel, and we're looking for you to be a part of it. If you have a moment, just go to WOSU.org/survey. There you can sign up and send us your thoughts. It's WOSU.org/survey.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
82 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40. Sunshine today. There is a slight chance of afternoon rain, maybe a thunderstorm, a high right around 85. A few clouds tonight with a chance of evening rain, a low of 65 degrees. Sunshine and a record high of 92 possible tomorrow. All Sides continues on WOSU.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There's going to be a barn raising on Sunday. If you want more information about that and where it's going to occur in Upper Arlington, it's going to be their new rec center. Go to our website at wosu.org/allsides, and we'll have an address there for you, and we'll have a link to the city site so that they can give you more information. We'll also have links to the Friends of Ohio Barns and also the Preservation Trades Network and the Timber Farmers Guild, Timber Framers Guild, because they all have websites. So 614-292-8513 if you'd like to join the show. And Mary, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. I want to, first of all, thank anyone who's trying to preserve Ohio barns, and I hope that's a lot of people in Ohio. I grew up with a country doctor as a father, and from 1936 to the 70s, we drove around central Ohio and made house calls. I went along as a child just to play in the car while he went in the house, but he talked about the barns and also mentioned that paint on the barn meant money in the bank. And then as barns begin to change, we noted that the property value is determined by, of course, the value of your property. And if a farmer keeps his barn up, then his property value goes up. And so I think that's been a motivator.
That was somewhere where they started to cut corners, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's been one of the reasons that our barns have been falling apart, is that the farmers don't want to have an increase in taxes. And so I'm wondering, what can we do to make our voices heard at the legislature that we would like to preserve Ohio barns and maybe even change the tax structure for people who are doing that?
Any ideas, Joel?
I can't speak for Ohio, but I think somebody here can. I'll just bring you the perspective of I work out of New Hampshire, and there are legislative remedies tried and true for these kinds of issues. In New Hampshire, you can get small grants from the New Hampshire Preservation Alliance for assessment, so you can get an idea of what it would take to keep that barn going. Most of the barn bill has been championed by the senior senator from Vermont, whose name is Patrick Leahy, and there's a pretty well-established tax relief structure in the New England states for historic structures, not just barns, but if you can make the case to your municipal authority that this is part of the landscape and the historic fabric of your community, you should be able to see some significant relief.
And, Rudy, you're saying that there's a tax credit in Ohio?
Yes.
There are conditions?
Yeah. Anyone who owns a historic barn, if you are using it for any kind of income producing at all, if it's adaptive reuse and now you have wedding receptions in it, if you rent spaces for people to store boats or old cars, if you raise chickens in what used to be a horse barn, any income producing purpose whatsoever, 10% straight off the top of any money you put into it comes back as an income tax write-off. If you happen to take the time to get your barn on the National Register, which does an application process involved, you have to go through the State Historic Preservation Office, and once that is accomplished, if your barn becomes part of the National Registry, then it's a 20% tax credit, but there's more work involved. The nice thing about the 10% tax credit is nobody even asks any questions. You just fill out a form. Your tax person should know what form that is to fill out, and it just comes straight off 10%. So that's a break.
Okay, Mary?
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your call. 614-292-8513, and you can email us as well at allsides@wosu.org or go to our All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. And Ed, you're on the air. You want to talk about wonder if there's any groups that are preserving mills as well.
Well, I know there are some groups that are preserving some of the individual mills around, like the old rock mill down by Lancaster, but I wanted to know if they how much or if they share their expertise between the different organizations, how much interplay there might be. Because I know there's several of those older mills and structures out there that are in just as bad shape, if not worse, than the barns are, because they haven't been used for even longer. And I'll listen off the air.
Okay, thank you. Is there a voice for the mills?
There absolutely is. There's a whole subculture of highly enthusiastic millwright/historian folks, mostly out in the East, led by a man named Jim Cricker, who's started out life as has become a talented boat builder as well on a very large scale. Mills, the caller's right, mills suffer more than barns do because almost all of them have water running through the basement by design, and there's plenty of reasons for decay and deterioration there. There's lots of enthusiasm behind that mission. It's more complicated than restoring an old barn, but there's no lack of passion behind it. And the skill set that we try to develop in people through the Timber Framers Guild is essential to that process, but it's not all you need. You actually need more because you need to be a millwright to make it right in the end.
Ready?
Well, I think the other thing, too, that's important, we did have somebody from Friends of Ohio Barns down at the Rock Mill just this last weekend to actually set up a display there to introduce Friends to those folks. But I think one of the things that your caller and anybody that has an interest in preserving those types of structures should realize is there's always opportunities to approach the Preservation Trades Network or the Timber Framers Guild and to ask us if we would consider those sites as an educational opportunity. We love to put together workshops where we come in and actually work on those buildings and do exactly the same thing that's happening here this week at Upper Arlington, giving people an opportunity to hone their skills or to learn new skills by being shoulder to shoulder with professional tradespeople. And the Guild and Preservation Trades Network have actually begun cooperating over the last couple of years and having cooperative workshops. So not only do you have timber frame specialists there, but you have slate roof specialists there, and you have dry stone or limestone foundation people there. You have people that understand how to do the traditional plaster repairs. All of the various things. One of the things that's important to understand about historic structures is they were built by hand. Today, buildings are manufactured. They're assembled out of components and pieces that you buy. But the buildings that we're talking about, the old mills, the old barn that is being restored this week, those buildings were all built by hand, and they were built by a variety of trades. It wasn't one particular trade that built that building. It was a lot of people involved.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have an email. You can email us as well at allsides@wosu.org. This is from a listener. They write, "Isn't it also true that the Japanese have been protecting their forests for centuries? Timber framing assumes that there is a reliable supply of high-quality mature trees for felling, too, doesn't it? What are we doing in Ohio to link these mutual interests and reforest some of the state for this purpose so that we don't feel compelled to raid our national forests?" Anybody?
You had a Joel? Great project not too long ago.
Rudy?
You were taking some dead standing wood that was going to be a problem and ended up so that there was a great harvesting of wood without having to go through
Yeah. One of the problems that you have is that you end up with various interest groups at cross purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've heard of this in lots of different situations. So as soon as you decide you want to go into the state forests and start cutting down the big trees that are going to be useful for doing timber frame repair work or timber frame construction work, well, all of a sudden you have the tree huggers saying, wait a minute, you can't do that. You can't cut those trees. And unfortunately, what's happened is we haven't taken the time to work together to have all of us develop a like mindset. So we understand what sustainability really means. Sustainability does not mean letting the forest grow to maturity and beyond fall down and rot. It does makes lots of nice wildlife habitat, but it doesn't do what your caller is talking about, and that's to have the forest properly managed so that it can be farmed and used. The project Rick is talking about was actually at Malabar Farm State Park again, and it was the second barn that they have there called the Working Farm Barn, and it needed tremendous amounts of work done to it. It had been stripped of many of the timbers inside, and the building, literally the greenery was holding the building up is the condition that it was in. And when we were asked to restore it, we went to the state and we said, do you have a state forest where we can harvest the trees that we need? We need white oak. Well, luckily what we were able to do was take trees that were beetle killed by the gypsy moth beetle or by the gypsy moth larva and harvest those trees before they went to waste and turn them into components. So you had a state forest supplying materials for a building on a state park to do the repair work. And once the people that were involved saw how that worked, then the tree huggers were happy because it wasn't like we were just going in there and milling the forest down. We were actually finding a good purpose for it. And I would love to see that happen on a much broader scale. I think that type of sustainable approach to working on projects – where the state is involved and the state has the resources, let's match them up. Let's put them to use, because that's what our forests are for. Your caller is absolutely right. If we don't manage our forests, we will not have the resources we need to do this work in the future.
And in a plug for both Mr. Maloney and timber framing, we did a fun little exercise this morning with the school kids about counting growth rings on salvaged timber from this historic structure and comparing it to what we were using for the new. We should never lose sight of the fact that if we build our buildings properly and design them in a way that makes them continuously useful to people, they will, in fact, long outlast the forest's timeline to replace the material that we're taking. And I don't think you can say that about any other construction technology. So Tim, how old did you and the students figure out that what year that
the new
we have a section of a timber. Is that right?
Correct.
Hand-hewn timber. It looks very heavy.
The new timbers that we have for the new barn construction are about 30 years old. The old timbers, we stopped counting at 100, and we weren't near the edge.
Wow.
And what Joel's speaking of is if we would then plant a new seed where that one tree was taken for that timber, if this barn lives more than 30 years, which I far guarantee that, and plant that new seed, you will have a new timber to match that timber in 30 years to build a new structure. And it really hit home with first graders this morning how simple that logic was, and it really is.
614-292-8513. Farley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You have another way to reuse old barn.
Yeah, I can't, because of, you know, the format that you guys have, I can't speak to what I do with barnwood, but I think there's a tremendous value in blown down barns by recapturing and reusing the barn wood, and people love that stuff in their houses architecturally, paneling, and that weathered barn wood is a fabulous look in homes and in other uses like what I do, but there's so many blown down barns. I see them everywhere. In fact, on Cosgray Road out there in, I want to say, western Franklin County, there's one barn that I've been working on and using the wood from, and there's three or four big barns that are going to get bulldozed over. I think we can recycle some of this wood and some of this timber and sell it to help support, you know, the rebuilding of the other projects that you guys have. I don't know how we do it, but like I say, weathered barnwood, there's lots of people that like it for its natural beauty and for, I guess, what it signifies and where it comes from. So you could call it barns to whatever and generate some funds to help save the barns that we do still have standing.
Could that lead to, Farley, thanks for your call, could that lead to people then selling off their barns kind of as scrap instead of thinking about preserving them? Is there a fear of that?
It's not a fear.
Okay.
It's reality.
It's a reality, yeah.
Is that a big problem where barns are going?
Yes,
very much so. And some of the problem is that we get, unfortunately, rather unscrupulous people that want to come in and sell the farmers on the idea that their barn is an insurance liability, and that if they get rid of this problem, then they won't, obviously the liability goes away. Well, they come in and they say that they will take their barn down and they will find a good home for it. And when in reality, all they're doing is they're trying to find the choice pieces out of the barn to reuse as flooring and other items not intended to give the barn a new life. And they take those select pieces and then they just leave a big pile of rubble and walk away.
Yeah. And in reality, our barns contain our virgin forest. And that's something that's really important to understand. And I strongly support people like Farley in the work that they're doing, if what they really are doing is focusing on the structures that are lost and salvaging that material. Where what Rick's talking about, where the line needs to be drawn, is the structures that aren't lost yet. We shouldn't be harvesting our structures for the material that's in them. We should be finding new uses for them.
Otherwise,
the knowledge that they contain, they're libraries of knowledge. Ask the people that are on the workshop this week out in Upper Arlington if they're learning by just touching the wood, and they'll tell you absolutely. And if that knowledge is lost, then we've lost a great thing.
We have an email from Rita. She writes, I live very near Sunny 95 Park. By the way, that is what the park's going to be called. And just wanted to share that it has been so much fun to go over to the park and interact with the timber framers. They are happy to answer questions and are very kind about allowing pictures to be taken of them while they work. It is beautiful to see the old tools and old manner of construction. I would encourage anyone to stop by this week and check out what is happening. It is not only good for Upper Arlington, but for the city of Columbus. Well, I guess anybody who wants to go there. Congrats to Upper Arlington on this great project, and much thanks to the Timber Framers for volunteering their time. And we have a call, too, from Marianne. Marianne, thanks for waiting so long. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you.
You want to talk about private funding?
Yes, and this question is directed to Mr. Maloney. I believe he has had some experience with barn building in another suburb, and I'm questioning whether he had worked with private dollars in that instance and how he sees this working. Is it good? Is it bad?
What the caller's referencing is I was with the city of Westerville when they worked on the Everill Barn project, in which that was a barn that the city acquired through a purchase and then literally moved about 60 feet. That was used mostly with public dollars. I should say almost all public dollars. This project is unique, and the caller hints at. This is done mostly, and when I say mostly, 90-plus percent with private dollars.
Okay.
The Upper Arlington Community Foundation has taken on the challenge to raise all the funds. Their target goal is $900,000 for this project. That's to get it started all the way through finish. And they are about three-quarters of the way there, so they still need the last few dollars out there to get. But this is a real nice private-public partnership where the foundation is doing all of the fundraising, all of the work, and then going to donate it back to the residents.
Okay. Thanks, Marianne, for your call. We have one more call now from Tom. You want to talk about ash trees. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi. I live in Arlington, and I know you have a program over there to remove a certain number of ash trees every year because of the ash borer. I know there's many good-sized ash trees on private property, and they're going to probably all die as well. And there, I was just wondering if you ever thought about a connection between those private owners that will have their ash trees removed that are really, many are good for timber, and, you know, tall and thin and I just wanted to ask that.
It's a great question. I've got a great answer for you. We've been down this road. Ash is a beautiful tree and a remarkable timber frame material. I despair over the damage of the beetle, but I can't do anything about it except we did a big project with Rick, actually, up in Springfield, Ohio, a couple of years back, and we bought a bunch of salvage ash logs and put them in that building, and they're going to last a whole lot longer in that building than they would have in a burn pile on the ground. And if you take a slightly larger perspective, you should also note that all of the carbon that's sequestered in those trees is fixed in that building for its life. It is not going up into the air in a burn pile.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
We're running out of time. Thank you for your call. Thanks for everyone who listened. There is a barn raising in Upper Arlington this weekend. I think on Sunday is when it's open, but you can go by and watch anytime you want while they're working during the day. We'll have links to all that stuff on WOSU.org/allsides. I want to say thanks to my guests, Rudy Christian, Executive Director of the Preservation Trades Network. Rudy, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And also Rick Beck. He is president of the Friends of Ohio Barns. Rick, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
And Tim Maloney. He's director of Upper Arlington Parks and Recreation. Have fun.
See everybody Sunday.
Okay. And Joel McCarty. He is executive director of the Timber Framers Guild. Thank you for being with us today, Joel.
Thanks for your interest, and come down and see us.
I'm going to. I'm also going to ask my listeners once again to go to WOSU.org/survey and tell us what you think about WOSU and All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're looking for people to give us some advice. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.